Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, who is the ghostly figure in a dressing room? Plus, your calls of real ghost stories at 855-853-4802 as I talk in an octave lower, because if I talk any higher, I will sound like I'm 13 going through puberty.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the countdown. I'm Casey Kasem. We're counting down the biggest hits from around the world right here on this great radio station, B98.5789. Today's best mix of your hits for the 80s, 90s, and today for the Valley every single week. I'm Tony Bruschi, and when I'm sick, I can do a good Casey Kasem. Now, on with the countdown. So, hi everyone. This is, of course, Real Ghost Stories Online. You listened to Casey back in the day. That's kind of how he began the show. Here we are, 855-853-4802. Gonna try and get through the show. I have a... I guess technically, Sean's joining me, by the way. He's eating his cereal, as you can hear the sound of his spoon. What the hell are you doing? What are you doing?
Oh, I was just getting some Vicks VapoRub for you. I was seeing how I could mail it, whether it be UPS or FedEx.
It sounds like you're like sliding something across the floor.
Oh, that is that's just the new chinchilla got at the local animal shelter.
What is it doing?
Well, you remember back a couple of years ago, they had the Furby?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just got a Furby for him.
Okay. Get rid of it. Because it's really distracting. I don't know what that is. Now he stopped.
Hold on.
Now he's doing it again.
Hold on. Okay, there we go.
Okay, now it's done. Okay, I don't know what the hell that was. I'm going to try and get through the show here today and talk. It's weird when you have a cold. It's not a cold. It's technically like, I guess, the flu, even though I had a flu shot. But Jen got it. Now I got it. And they told her it was the flu. And she got a flu shot, too. Everybody did. But it's, you know, one of those fine strains that kind of go off the spectrum that you kind of get. It's good times.
Well, the funny thing is that I don't know about you, but at least... more often than not, people that actually got a flu shot are the ones that ultimately ended up getting the flu. And the people that did not get a shot since they were 9 years old have not gotten the flu.
Yeah, I don't think that's statistically accurate, though. So I'm not going to agree with that. I'm all about getting your shots and getting your vaccinations, and I'm very pro doing that. But I get what you're saying. Sometimes it does feel like that. Although I've gotten the flu shot now for, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And this is the first time I've technically, I guess, gotten it. And I wouldn't even know it was it had Jen not actually gone in and gotten, like, the doctor tested and said, yeah, you got a strain of the flu, but it's not the bad one. It's the good one, as if there's a good one. But I guess there is a good one when you compare it to, like, what the other ones are. So
you're not having to make frequent stops during this recording. That's the good flu.
I'm sitting on a bedpan right now with no pants on. That's why I'm doing the show today.
The best is when you're so far in the flu that you really forget whether you're, if you're sitting on the bedpan or you're sitting on the bucket, or you just, it's going both ways, that really, as long as there's a catch of something on either end, Yahtzee.
I'm sitting on a bedpan and I'll be hallucinating throughout the show today. So it'll be a really great episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.
Really glad I downloaded this one.
Yeah.
Casey, who's your story to today?
I'll be intermittently going in and out of consciousness between me and the channeling the spirit of Casey Kasem. So you're all in for a great show today. 855-853-4802 is our number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. I'll go to a letter, see how many of these I can get through, and then when I deem I can't talk anymore, we'll go to some calls. It says, this happened about 3 or 4 years ago. I was in a Goodwill store in Austin, Texas, with my mom around 7 p.m. We'd split up in the store and gone shopping, but ended up splitting up and going our ways in the store. I'd found a shirt that I wanted to try on, so I went to the dressing room near the back end of the store. Since the sun was going down and the store was a few hours away from closing, it wasn't very busy. I walked up to the dressing room but saw that two were occupied and one was empty with the light out, door closed, locked. Typically, I don't care to wait around for employees to come to unlock the door, and I'm nimble enough, so I'll slide under the dressing rooms, unlock them from the side to the inside, and turn the light on. This time, I was about to do this. Looked under the door, and I saw feet. I saw someone's legs from the shin down. Girl's feet, not barefoot, in some simple slip-on flat shoes, standing, still facing, away from the closed door. Light out, door locked, not moving. I stood there for a second, very confused. After about 10 seconds, I got weirded out and decided to pick a different dressing room down the row that I realized had opened up. I made a mental note to look and see if the person was still there afterwards. Tried on the shirt, exited the dressing room, and was walking back casually, turned to look and see, and no one was there. Being so quiet in the store at the time, I also didn't hear a door open or close to indicate that anyone had left. It was very confusing and odd to me. I didn't dwell on it too much. It was only until later that week that I had relayed the story again. Then I realized how unusual it even sounded. Researching the area, the Goodwill had only been built about 15 years prior. It had been forest and land beforehand, and potentially could have been somewhere where someone had lived before that. Funny thing is, when I finally told my mom, she told me I should have grabbed her and showed her. Ha, probably would have been gone by the time I'd done that, since she was across the whole store, then I'd appear a little bit crazy. Either way, it was a strange experience, and I'll never forget it. You know, I have to say, and I'm in no way trying to discourage people to donate or to use the services of Goodwill. It's a good company. They do good things. But what I have to, you know, take an honest look at it, though. What percentage of stuff do you think at Goodwill is stuff that just recently belonged to the dead?
Oh, I would go 65%.
Yeah. I would say it's got to be up there. I mean, we donate a lot of stuff in this household just because we have growing kids. So it's like, oh, take it out to the Goodwill and, you know, stuff like that. But I know a lot of families do that. But that's usually like the first reaction of, you know, once, you know, somebody kicks it. And if you're the one in charge, if you do the estate sale or whatever, and then whatever's left, well, we're just going to take all that to Goodwill. It's almost like, it's like saying, I'd like a Kleenex, you know, instead of I'd like a tissue. It's just, it's that ingrained in people. We're going to take it to the Goodwill. So you got to think, you know, that's people's stuff, people that just recently died. And I hear a lot of cases about people being attached to their stuff. And if there's stuff that they had a real attachment to or felt that there was a value to, ends up at the Goodwill and not in niece Nancy's dresser, I think you got a good chance you're going to get some ghostly happenings there. That's why I wonder how common it is for Goodwills or any sort of thrift store, whether it be like a DAV or whatever, to have stuff like this going on in it.
I just appreciate Uncle Larry being nice enough to show some privacy when he wanted to make sure his pants still fit for his funeral. use the dressing room. I mean, because let's be honest here. A, you're dead. You're a ghost.
Yeah.
B, it appeared to be during closing time. Didn't this person try to use the dressing room right when they just opened?
Yeah.
It's not like there was a line. But he took the time to go in the old dressing room.
I guess my question, because I think you missed a key part of the story, was it looked like women's legs wearing flats. So are you insinuating that Uncle Larry shaved his legs and wore women's flats secretly? And
I don't know if you heard me the first time, Tony. I'm very thankful, Uncle Larry. We don't ask questions when we talk to our uncles.
Oh, okay, I get you, okay.
Uncle Larry.
I didn't know if you were insinuating Uncle
Larry. Dressing room.
I caught it, but I wasn't like sure if that was an intentional joke or
it was a 100% accidental joke. But okay, we're just going to go with it because okay, Uncle Larry clearly always wore dresses, but this is a bit more formal of an event.
Yeah.
You know, the wake of his death. Well, the wake of Uncle Larry's death. We're not going to he/she. That's a bit too possessive. And wants to wear a business suit. That's why Uncle Larry's going to try on some pants.
We're really reading a lot into this ghost. A lot.
You know, there was a lot of questions for Uncle Larry when Uncle Larry was living.
Mm-hmm.
And there clearly continuing on.
And being answered at the Goodwill.
For everybody else in the room, that whole story of Uncle Larry was 100% fictitious.
Seriously? Or is there really an Uncle Larry in your life you'd like to share with us?
You know, here's the deal, we Tony. Can talk here. You don't have a voice. I don't want to get that much into it right now, so we're just going to slowly pass on. I am being very, very sarcastic here this morning, so I do apologize. I did have an Uncle Bill,
and
he has obviously since passed on. My dad had one brother. My mom had five brothers and a sister. And Uncle Bill, the best way to describe Uncle Bill is basically Cousin Eddie in Christmas Vacation. That is my, and I don't say that as a negative. The redeeming qualities that Cousin Eddie had, and just the pure, genuine love for his family.
Yeah,
that was my dad's brother. So, Uncle Bill, real. Uncle Larry, fake. There you have it.
Did Uncle Bill ever empty the shitter in your front yard?
Nobody did. See, here's the thing, and this is going way off course, so I will be very efficient, but my one of my sisters, I have two older sisters, and one of them takes pride in the more creative the gift, the more emotional the gift, the more emotion that it evokes out of the person opening the gift, it's a win. For example, if growing up, my niece, my sister's daughter, you know, the pictures and stuff, the collage for my parents, and if they cry when they would open the gift, tears of joy, that was perceived a win.
Okay.
Which is kind of fucked up because, hey, Merry Christmas, I want to make you cry. But it just, it shows the emotion and the love, etc. Well, here's the deal. When you have an uncle who you don't see really that often, but you still want to be creative rather than here's a gift card to insert gas station, you've got to be a little bit more creative. Like, I don't know what the fuck to get him. So back, I don't know if you remember the Christmas M&Ms, the red and green M&Ms.
Sure.
And then they had the glass containers, if you will, but they were in the form of a Christmas tree. And so you could fill these containers that looked like glass Christmas trees with M&Ms and lovely decorative little snack containers when you have a holiday party. The thing of it is these Christmas trees, you loaded them from the bottom. Uh-huh. So essentially, you had the cap on the bottom. So fast forward to my Uncle Bill opening. Yes, my sister got my uncle a Christmas tree Rubbermaid container filled with green and red Christmas M&Ms.
Uh-huh.
So my Uncle Bill holds it up to show everybody.
Oh, God.
Hey, look, I got some M&Ms. As the bottom comes undone and M&Ms everywhere.
Well, there you go. Christmas magic is what that is. Christmas.
It was pretty eventful in the next Christmas that my dad took the pleasure of slowing it down in slow motion. So you see my Uncle Bill. Oh, and the M&Ms just, you had to be there. It was funny. And if you could just picture Cousin Eddie holding up a Christmas tree of an M&Ms while emptying the shitter. Well, there you go.
That is Christmas at your house. Good story. 855-853-4802 is our number. Let's go to our next letter. It says, during this time, there was an active and open portal in the bottom down half front of my house. It wasn't active when I would sleep in that room. It would actually diminish to a weary, negative feeling being watched, just things that would happen outside of the room. However, when I was sleeping in our middle bedroom, my original childhood room, the activity would be overbearing in almost an every night occurrence. On this particular night, I was in my room and I could feel an entity standing outside my bedroom door. And to paint the picture of the house, all the bedrooms were grouped into a long hallway, so my door was right next to my parents, which was to the left. If you stood in front of one door, you were standing in front of both. I'd gotten very strong in my spiritual psychic abilities at this time, so I wasn't afraid of it, but I knew I had to address it because it was planning on harming someone, and I could feel that intent. When I opened the door, I saw a tall, hooded figure. It was all black and had some of the same characteristics of a shadow man, but looked completely different. It had this pungent, death-like odor. It wore a robe with a hood, and in my mind's eye, I could tell it didn't have an actual face. It never said anything out loud, but I could communicate with it and understand it clearly as if it was. It wanted my parents, and I was there, and it was there to hurt them. So, I stood beside it. I told it that it could not have them, and it smiled at me and called me a silly little girl and said that it couldn't stop it. I laughed and said that if that's true, then why can't you hurt me? And it couldn't. So I felt the energy around it get thicker, turn more malicious and angrier, and I said, I protect all that's in this house, and as long as I do, you cannot harm anyone who dwells here. And I willed it away. As I did, it told me that one day if I forget, it will be there waiting. Now, my sort of protection, my sort of protection spell at the time, I would put a shield around myself, and after this occurrence, my parents and the person who is now living in that black back bedroom. So while things would happen around the house, as I didn't know how close to the portal yet at that time I was, no one could get hurt. But long and short of the story, one day, I did forget. I was upset, cried myself to sleep that night, put a barrier up, but not by my parents. Next night, my mother had an asthma attack. It was so severe, we had to call an ambulance. Her oxygen levels were incredibly low. They gave her oxygen and kept her in the hospital for 3 to 4 days. I realized what I had done, and I put a barrier around her and my dad again, and she was able to go back home shortly after. I never saw the entity again, visually, although with a number of apparitions that would come in and out of the back room's closet, I'm sure it was still there. Thanks for everything you guys do. You've been fantastic. Been listening for almost a year now. I've loved every episode. I plan on becoming an EPP very soon. It's an interesting one where someone has an ability to protect, and I'm guessing others in the family seem somewhat oblivious to it. You know, probably even somewhat, it's hard to know because it really wasn't expressed here, but it wasn't really expounded upon either. Probably somewhat passive if it's brought up of, okay, yeah, that's great, you do your thing, but it almost reaffirming to the individual that there is something there as far as what her abilities are. When she did forget, then something actually happened.
I am right there along with you. As much as I have to expound upon with Uncle Larry, yes, you took the words right out of my mouth for that one.
I'm sure I did. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Cemeteries used to be a place that people would picnic in. Were you aware of that? It was like a park.
Used to or still do?
Well, not referring to people like myself who just like to go and hang out at them. But no, people actually, it was a thing. Americans picnicked in cemeteries. There's lots of pictures of this around the early, like 1910, 1920s, right around that time, late 1800s. It was quite a place to go and hang out. A lot of the older cemeteries, if you notice, of like gravestones starting in the late 1800s, those tend to be fairly scenic locations. Really, today, it'd be looked at as like, oh, that'd be great real estate to put a condo on or something. But back then it was, oh, this would be a great place to bury the dead and to go picnic. And I was just looking online at all these pictures, these black and white photos of people just hanging out in the cemetery, almost as if it was like the mall food court. Today, if it ever came back, there'd be like food trucks parked there. And people would be, oh, can I get my my taco and my smoothie over here while I go sit on Uncle Larry's grave?
That would probably put funeral homes out of business, or they would need to, opposed to actually having it in the physical structure of the funeral home, you celebrate one's death at their burial ground, their gravesite.
Sure. Well, I mean, a lot of people do that. I quite understood why we have both, but I guess to everybody needs their own. Because yeah, a lot of times someone dies, you have the service of the funeral home, and they have a second service at the gravesite. I always just kind of thought, why don't we just do one? Why don't we just do it at the gravesite? And, you know, rather than, it's like kind of almost redundant to, that's how I feel in some cases. I totally get, you know, having something at the gravesite. I don't like the idea of you have the service at the church or at the funeral home and then nothing at the gravesite. I would just say, let's do the gravesite. That's it. One big thing right there with a food truck and free ices for everybody.
Tacos, the taco truck.
I believe in my will, I put that there needs to be like karaoke. Not even kidding.
Christopher Cross needs to be sung at minimum 4.5 times upon my passing.
Just loop it over.
If not, I will come back. I will shun you.
is all this like weird shit in there. I made it like almost like 7-8 years ago, right before Harp was born. And it was just like, you know, it was the first will I ever made. And it just, you know, kind of says, you know, well, here's what happens if I die. And then, you know, for the funeral, it was something to the effect of like, there should be a bar, and there should be karaoke and all sorts of shit. And the thing is, when I did that, it was kind of like, people were like, you're what? And since that time, I have seen and heard from so many people, even like Facebook pictures of people like, oh yeah, so-and-so passed away. And they really wanted us to go to this bar and have a party. And it's like, so my thing is not all that off. I mean, it's pretty, actually normal or becoming more normal than it was, or more acceptable than it was even like 10 years ago. But
I think it's evolving. I think a lot of things that were historically done in your elder age,
yeah,
we're doing them earlier on in age. It's just, rather than putting together a will when getting out your feather and dipping it in ink and writing your scroll of upon your death, it's now a Facebook status update. It's now a tweet. It's now, you know, a story on Instagram. So
yeah,
it's happening. It's just a matter of the way that it's happening. But I'm a bit curious, with you having written your will, I have not, as far as people listening to this, to reach out some form of social media to say if they have or not. And I'm a bit curious to see the results, because I kind of feel as though I'm lack of organization going on, that I haven't done that. But I also feel as though I knock on Formica, got a few years left.
Yeah. I mean, I just did it because it was more so, you know, I have kids, you know, and that's what made me do it. Had I not had kids, I didn't know that I would even have one yet, quite honestly. It was just more so like, what happens, you know, if something happens, and then, you know, there's some direction there.
I'm wondering how I can formulate this where my dog can comprehend my will.
You could probably, you know, there's that Google Translate. I don't know if it translates into dog yet, but
I'll get on that.
Might be something to look at. 855-853-4802 is our number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your experiences with us. Let's go to a caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey guys, this is Dave from Georgia again. As I pointed out in my last story about Earl's mother, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to that or not. It was about 2 weeks ago. I've had a lot of experiences my whole life, and this one, I have a little bit of anxiety even discussing this story. I could probably spend a whole hour on this one alone, but I'll try to make it short. I have a tendency to be verbose, and I apologize for that. But a little nod to Carol Hughes. She discussed, you had her on her show discussing the house that she lived in Nebraska, and how she was afraid to look into it for fear that whoever or whatever was haunting it, you know, may be aware of that. I researched this house recently, and I have to admit, I had an experience where for a couple days I was very nervous. I had a tightness in my chest. I had high anxiety just researching this place. I did find out a lot of information, but I have to admit, I really, really was tense for about 2 days afterwards, and I couldn't explain it. So, Carol, don't research your house. But we moved into this house in the mid-60s. It was built in 1910, and the family who built the house lived there till 1935. I found most of this information out on, what's the name of that show or that website? Ancestry.com. And they lived there till 1935. And they moved away and bought a farm about 25 miles away. And they seem to have been a very normal family, lived happily ever after, no problems that I'm aware of. But the family that moved in afterwards, I don't think I should say their names. This house was in Kalamazoo, Michigan again. And I don't know if the people that own that house would like me to draw attention to it or not. But this second family moved into this house in 1935, And we moved in the early 60s. Well, we immediately, my mother, she struggled very, very hard to try to make this house cheerful, and it just had this dark feel to it. It just felt ominous. It never felt happy or bright. It was just a gloomy house, a very big house. And my mother used to complain about, you know, not being able to just make it cheerful. And as we lived there, after about 3 months, my mother, she had this cat named Pinky, which she absolutely adored. This cat, she just loved that cat. And Pinky was about 3 years old, and one day she walked out into the dining room of this house, and Pinky was dead on the floor. This was about a three-year-old cat. She'd had no health problems. She was dead on the floor. My mother was hysterical. She just could not believe that. She loved that cat to death. And there she was, dead on the floor. This was a sign of bad things to come. But the tension between my mother and father grew real intense, and my father became very aggressive, and to the point of being physically abusive to us kids. And I don't mean in a sexual way, but I'm talking about beatings. And his demeanor changed, and he became very aggressive and very dark, and we were terrified of him. Within 6 or 7 months, we were absolutely terrified of my father. There was me, and I had three brothers who are all deceased now. They all died early, which I don't know if that's connected to this. I certainly hope not. But anyway, we were afraid of my father. And then my mother started lapsing into depression, and she became a little aggressive. Not so much in the beating sense, but she just had a dark personality, which I'd never seen before. And we were really afraid to get her pissed off as well. And I had an upstairs bedroom, and there was another stairwell that went to another floor above me. It was three stories on this house. And the stairway door to the third level was in my bedroom. And now, I know this is almost funny because I've listened to your show so much, but my brother and I, my little brother, we had bunk beds. I laugh saying that because it comes up so much on your show, but that's what it was. And I was laying in my bed one night, and that stairway to the upper floor, the door, it had one of them old panel doors, wooden panel doors, and I was laying in bed, and that door opened one night, and I was still awake, and I saw, and I swear I saw this, there was like a, almost like your classic, what you would think a ghost would look like. It had no distinct arms or legs. It was just like a torso shape with a head, but it was kind of glowing this bluish white color. And it was about, I would say, approximately 5 foot tall. And I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. And I watched this thing come down the stairs, out the doorway, and then it just kind of took off down the hallway to the rest of the house, and I was just frozen in bed. I didn't dare move. And that was the first thing that I actually saw, but it wasn't the last. And we were there, like I said, the relationship between my parents kept getting gradually worse and worse, and they were a young couple at this time, you know, they were in their 20s, and they just started, you know, fighting with each other and being kind of abusive to us kids, and things got darker and darker, and I was young at the time, and One day I was up in my bedroom. I don't know what I was doing exactly, but I heard my mother scream. I mean, she screamed, and I went running downstairs to see what it was, and she was in the kitchen and had been washing dishes, and she was screaming about her rings, and she had taken her wedding rings off and set them on the counter or on the windowsill behind the kitchen sink, and I looked at them. And I don't know how to explain this, but they were absolutely glowing black. I mean, if you imagine a glowing light, well, this was glowing black. I'd never seen anything like that before or since, after, actually. And, I mean, I saw that. I didn't know how to explain it. My mother didn't know how to explain it, but she was frantically terrified over that. And, oh, it was probably, I don't know, a month or two after that. Again, I was on the top bunk of my bunk bed, and it was nighttime. And again, that door to the upper level opened one night, and I saw these, I can't explain it, these what looked like little glowing animals, probably about five of them. And, you know, I got the mental impression that maybe they were kittens, but you couldn't make out the detail because they were glowing. And they ran down the steps from the upper level and kind of ran around my room a little bit and then took off down the hall into the other part of the house. And that also terrified me. I had no idea what these things were, and they scared me to death. But that was the second, I guess you could call, I don't know if that's an apparition or if that's just a ghost, I'm not sure. But anyway, things like this were happening. I saw it. I don't know if my brothers saw it or not. They're not alive, and I can't really ask them anymore. But anyway, things got progressively worse and progressively worse. And my mother and father's relationship continued to deteriorate. And shortly after I saw these little ghosts and things like that, this is difficult to talk about, but my father shot himself in the driveway, and it was an extremely difficult time. He did live, but he shot himself. He was sitting in his car, and he shot himself in the chest. This put things off the deep end at that house. I mean, things got really bad after this. My mother was just hysterical. She lapsed into an even deeper depression herself. And again, this is really hard for me to talk about. But several weeks after this, my mother overdosed herself on prescription medications. And also, she did not die, but she was in the hospital for quite some time. And while this was all going on, the state stepped in and took me and my brothers out of the house, which was probably the best thing that could have happened to us. And I should also point out that the feeling that we had towards my father, we were so terrified of him. I remember when we realized he'd shot himself, and my mother was just frantically screaming, and she told us to walk to my grandmother's house, which was almost 2 miles away. And we were never allowed to go up there, but all four of us boys were walking up there, and I remember specifically the conversation where we all hoped that he would die. And that's a terrible thing for kids that are, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. We were all a couple years apart, but we were all in that age group. And but I remember that we all hoped he would die. And I mean, I think looking back on this is difficult. Man, but anyway, we were removed from the situation and placed into foster care for a while. My parents did recover. They got better. My grandparents ended up adopting me. And just me. I don't understand why it was just me, but my three brothers, it took a couple years, but my parents eventually got custody of them again, and they grew up with my parents, and I grew up with my grandparents, which was kind of a saving grace to me, I think. I don't know. But anyway, this house, it was just evil. I mean, there was just something deep, dark, and depressing there. I don't know what. Well, I got onto Ancestry.com and started looking up the history of that house. That's where I found out about the original owners living there till 1935 and the family that came afterwards. And they moved in 1935, and they were a fairly young couple. They were in their mid-30s when they moved in. And this is where I think the haunting originated. I looked up the family, and I found that the mother had, and I've seen her death certificate on Ancestry, and I know what happened to her. She had gotten breast cancer, and because of the breast cancer, I imagine, according to the death certificate, she had went into cardiac arrest in that house. So, and she was 39 years old. She was a fairly young woman, and the carcinoma in her left breast apparently is what caused the heart attack. But she died in that house. And okay, as if that wasn't enough to deal with, she had a son that was 14 years old at the time. Several years later, when he was 21, he also died in that house. So this is two young deaths so far in the house, and to me that completely explains the haunting and the dark, depressing feeling that there was in that place. But I go on even further, and the father, he made it about seven more years, and then he himself died at age, well, I don't know, was that a little more than that? I don't know. He was 51 when he passed away. So the mother died at 39, the son died at 21, and he died at 51. And that kind of explains the haunting to me. I don't know. I mean, that is such a dark, sad thing that I think that is what was going on in that house. And whatever it was trying to influence our family. I don't know why. I know both my parents attempted suicide. It was a terrible situation. They did recover. They never tried to do anything like that again. I mean, for they ended up being married for God till they both died. And they were in their 70s at the time. So, I mean, things got better after they moved, after they left that situation. And as a odd little note to this story, I looked up that house on, what is that called, Trulio or whatever, that a realty website, and that house is still standing, and in fact it looks exactly almost like it did when I lived there, and they showed interior pictures of it on this website, and it still has that dark foreboding atmosphere inside of it. And on this realty website, it talks about home values on that particular block in that particular neighborhood, and it says the average median price for a house on that block is $97,000 to $110,000. Okay, so they're not real cheap homes, but I looked, and that house had sold the year before for $22,700. Which tells me that there's probably still problems with that house if that's all they could get out of it. So, I don't know. That's my story, and it is true. There's more to it, but I really don't want to, you know, take too much time on this. But in a nod to Carol Hughes, do not look up your old house. I mean, while I was doing this research, I had, like, heart palpitations. I was nervous. I had a tightness in my chest, and it's almost as though I thought those, whoever was haunting that or whatever was haunting it, knew I was looking for it. So anyway, thanks a lot. That's my story. Talk to you later. Bye.
Kind of makes me want to do research on an old house,
or not ever.
I don't know. I've been curious about my old house. I want to thank you for your call. He always has great stories. I even emailed him saying, "Hey, if you got more, send more, because they're very interesting." The house that I grew up in, the one that you've been to, in my hometown, the original structure is gone, but there's like remnants of it. It was hit by a vehicle. Like a vehicle went off the road. This is before we ever moved in. By about 10 years, and the original house got hit and it burned to the ground. But there's a shed out back that we used for like the lawnmower and stuff, and it's the size of a one car garage. I mean, technically, if you look at this thing, you'd go, that's a one car garage. It's not really a shed, but it is what it is. And there's no way you could get a car in there the way it's set up in proximity to the house. So we use it for lawnmowers. But in there, you can tell it was something else once, because structurally on the inside, there's like what would have been where a wall was. There's like still like the beam that's up. And then there's also, you could tell where windows once were on the sides of this structure from the lumber on it. And I was always like, this is really interesting. This is like, this was, I don't think this was just like a shed that they took and just put siding on and decided to get rid of the windows. I think this might have been part of the original structure that burned. At least that's my guess, because you can even see like on the floor, and the concrete and stuff there, it's interesting the way it's laid out. There's almost like there's a trap door in there, which I'm really curious about, because I've never, of all the shit that I do, I've never actually opened that trap door. So that just came to mind as I'm speaking of it, is why did I never look under there? I don't know, but I will now. But there's a lot. It's weird. It's a weird shed. And Jen's even said when she's been in there, she's like, what was this? Like, I don't know. It's like where I used to store my toys for the sandbox and the lawnmower and the garden tools basically live in there. But she's like, there's something weird about this. And that was it. And she didn't know anything about it. She didn't know anything about that fire. She didn't know anything. And I don't know if anyone was killed in that. I'd be curious. Now I want to look that shit up. Because I'm thinking, if you drove your vehicle into a building and it's caught fire, there's a good chance someone may have died on that property in that accident. Now I want to look this up. I don't know the answer to any of this stuff.
Now, you as a child, that was pretty much your home all throughout your childhood.
What?
Did you move as a child a lot, or was that your home throughout your childhood?
That was my we moved one time, but that was my home from like the age of 3 to, they still live there, so.
Because what I would be interested, for me, growing up, we moved not many states away, but we did move a lot, and I'm interested to see, I can't think of any situations aside from one where we lived in what was essentially an old farmhouse. All the homes around this house current day was just farmland. In the basement of this house, there's I would imagine similar. I don't think anybody hit the house, but with it being an old farm and such, the walls in the basement, you can see where later in time that it was built on, but initially almost old cobblestones in the walls and such. But moving a lot, if that has anything to do with who are these new people in my home from somebody way back when that is haunting it, or at least being a part of it of such.
Sure.
If there's anybody that has moved that lived in places for only a short amount of time, but they were visited by someone, and also should they move multiple times in multiple houses that they had an experience, maybe more so on the negative side or a positive visiting. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. It is. It makes me curious. I tried, and this is not an advertisement for Ancestry. They're not paying us a dime. But if they'd like to, you can always email me, Ancestry. But I tried them a couple years ago, and just to look up just family history. And it was, I think, more in its early days. I think it's probably gotten a lot better than it was back then. But I was able to kind of trace the best I could some of my ancestry back. I got to Norway on my mom's side, and essentially to the northern areas, basically where the original Santa was from. So I kind of, yeah. So I joke with Harper. I'm like, we might be related to Santa. And the thing is, it might be true because it wasn't that big of a town. So I don't know. Maybe at some point, you know, the original Saint Nick, or the man who went around and delivered the gifts to the children, was a great uncle or something. I don't know.
I just want to get all over the interview now and see where my great grandpa's great grandpa.
It's interesting. It is an interesting thing to do. But I mean, there's some guessing I had to do as far as, you know, who was here or who was there. Because you, unless you know for sure, I mean, you can, I guess, you know, do some more research and look at census things and trace it better. I ended up having to do a little bit of guessing here and there as to who this is logically, you know, the person is this person's parent. But the thing is, there's so many weird things with families, especially where families were structured out of necessity. Back in the day when people would die and, you know, well, you know, so-and-so's, you know, husband died, but the brother's single. So let's have the brother marry the widowed wife so that there's a man in the house and she's taken care of and the kids are taken care of. And some of that shit just wasn't even like documented. It just happened. And so, you know, genetically, you have to look at some of the stuff going, well, how accurate are the genetics of family trees when this stuff went on left and fucking right? You know, where you think this person's the grandfather, technically it's like a cousin or an uncle or something. But it's interesting how that worked. And at this point, there's very little way to know once you start digging back so far.
I would agree. I think just still the curiosity,
yeah.
And almost the game, as you will, to try to connect the dots. It's a very interesting to think your uncle now. So what are you doing Saturday? Well, I mean, your dad died, so I'm marrying your mom.
What? Today it would be like a Lifetime, like a scandalous, you know, miniseries. But
I thought Maury Povich was not recording any more new episodes. Apparently so.
Apparently it's back on. Back then it was just like, well, what's it make sense? Might as well do it. And I get it. I mean, you had to. It was necessity. It was survival. But today it's like, holy shit. I wonder if anybody like ever goes back to, well, you know what? Our great, great, great uncle was actually our grandpa, you know. So this makes it totally all right that I'm sleeping with your wife. You know, it's like, I don't think that's gonna fly. Maybe on Maury, but probably not in family law court. There you go.
Family favorites.
And that's gonna wrap up our program for today. If you like the show, keep us on the air, become an extra podcast person, sign up at ghostpodcast.com, get access to all the bonus episodes, advanced episodes, get a free e-copy of our book, a $14 value, an Amazon bestseller. You get that when you sign up as well. It's only $5, so you're already coming out ahead with that book and all the content. I mean, it's a lot of content all there. Check it out, ghostpodcast.com. Keep us going. Until next time, for Sean, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.